Busted appliance? This is your sign to upgrade. Shop at Lowe's to get up to 35% off and next day delivery on hundreds of major appliances. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 3/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Order by 4 p.m. Available Monday through Saturday. Subject to availability. Fees, exclusions, and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/appliance delivery for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. To support the show and get access to early release and ad-free episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. You can also hit subscribe in Apple Podcasts. Videos of our Thursday release episodes between the madness are available on YouTube and Spotify. We've got all the links in our episode notes.
The opinions expressed in the following episode do not necessarily reflect those of the Minds of Madness podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
One of my all-time favorite Hollywood tropes is the idea of one last score, the backbone to every great heist movie. You know the setup. The veteran thief promising his crew that this job will be their ticket out. One clean plan, one clean exit, and then a quiet life on the other side. You can picture it easily. Blueprints spread across a table. The getaway rehearsed again and again. The reassurance that this time, nothing can go wrong. The trope has a kind of morale symmetry. It gives the audience permission to root for the thief, because the goal isn't greed, it's escape. He's not stealing for the thrill, he's stealing for freedom. But that's just fiction. In real life, the last score is almost never a clean break. More often, it's a breaking point, and the people chasing it aren't gentlemen thieves. They're criminals betting everything on assumptions they haven't fully tested. Well, in October 2024, two men in Detroit decided it was their turn. They scoped out a target they believed would pay off and carefully planned to carry it out. But it wasn't a bank or casino they were targeting. Instead, it was a pawnbroker and jeweler who'd worked the neighborhood for 3 decades. They'd seen his store and his home in a well-to-do suburb, and together, they made a dangerous assumption that a man who dealt in gold and diamonds must be sitting on a fortune. It was the kind of logic that felt airtight, but real life doesn't follow the rules of the movies. Join me now as we examine the murder of 72-year-old Hussein Sam Murray, a jeweler killed in his Rochester Hills basement by two men posing as utility workers. You'll hear how a plan they believed would be easy money eventually unraveled into a trail of evidence that led investigators straight back to them. It was just after 5 o'clock in the morning on September 30th, 2024. When Thomas Keeling stepped out into the pre-dawn cold of Dearborn Heights, a suburb west of downtown Detroit. As his work boots hit the front porch on his way out the door, he was ready for another routine day, installing traffic signs at construction sites for POCO, Michigan's oldest traffic control sign company. But as he glanced down his quiet residential street, something immediately felt wrong. His white Ford F-250 was gone, a company truck his boss let him drive home at the end of each day. The Poco Deggles were plastered along both sides. Custom racks lined the bed for hauling signs, and even the license plate spelled it out, P-O-C-O. And it wasn't valuable in the way thieves usually look for. The truck was worn from daily use at construction sites, coated in dust, and showing its age. The flywheel squeaked loudly every time it moved, an unmistakable sound. So who would want to steal such an instantly recognizable truck? Thomas pulled out his phone and immediately reported the truck stolen. The report then went into the system with all the others. One more entry in a city where, on average, about 50 vehicles are stolen every day. By the time the paperwork was filled, Thomas was already moving on with his day. But what no one realized yet was that the truck hadn't simply been taken. It had been chosen. Ten days later, on October 11th, just after noon, Detroit police officer Eric Hill was on patrol near 8 Mile Road.
I was driving east on 8 Mile Road by John R. when I observed smoke southeast of that intersection. So, in my experience, little backstory, I worked at the 11th precinct where this car was located for about 6.5 years. Knowing that there's almost nothing in that area, and for something to be burning in the middle of the day, it would be highly unusual, likely tied to something violent. I immediately drove to go investigate that area. On East Margaret Street, just east of John R. It was in a vacant field. A white F-250 on fire, with two firefighters standing by watching. They didn't actually have a fire truck there. They had been two firefighters driving one of the department vehicles on their way to lunch when they observed the same thing and went to investigate. I was in plain clothes in an unmarked vehicle, so I got out, identified myself as Detroit Police to the firefighters, and asked what was going on with the burning car.
Through the smoke and flames burning through the truck, Officer Hill noticed something. Lettering along the side of the vehicle.
So upon determining that the car had DTE logos on it, I immediately contacted our dispatch asking if there had been any reports of a stolen DTE truck to Detroit police that day. At the time, I was told no. I didn't learn it was related to anything until later on in the day around 4:30, 5 o'clock.
DTE Energy is one of Michigan's largest utility companies. And at first glance, the truck looked like one of theirs. DTE logos on the side, even a license plate registered to the company. But once the fire was out, investigators ran the VIN, and as it turned out, it wasn't a DTE truck after all. It was registered to POCO, a traffic control sign company based in Dearborn Heights, which meant the plates had been deliberately swapped. And the DTE markings weren't paint. They were professionally printed magnetic decals, carefully placed over the original branding. Someone had stolen a work truck, disguised it as a utility vehicle, and then torched it in an empty field. But why? By late afternoon, detectives in Rochester Hills, a wealthy suburb 25 miles north, would begin to understand the connection, because that burned truck was tied to a 911 call made earlier the same day. A call about two men posing as DTE workers, and a call about a home invasion and a murder. Kristen Nahas lives in Rochester Hills, near Newcastle Drive, and on the morning of October 11th, she stepped outside just after 11 to walk her dogs around the block.
I left at 11:15 to walk my dogs around the block.
Almost immediately, Kristen noticed the neighborhood felt off. It was a Monday, but there was far more activity than usual. Work crews, trucks, people moving around. Enough to distract her dogs as they pulled at their leashes.
It was very busy. The houses down from me had a lot of action. The dogs were kind of excited about work crews, a lot of trucks, a window crew at another house, three doors down. The table saw out in the driveway and people working. It was, you know, exciting for them. They were distracted. But almost immediately, I heard a squeaking noise, like a fan belt, of a vehicle that was going so painfully slow, maybe 5 miles an hour. It was kind of annoying. As it passed me, the pickup truck carried on down the street.
Kristen kept walking, letting her dog stop and sniff along the curb. A few moments later, the sound came back, this time in the opposite direction.
I carried on with my walk, continued maybe another couple houses down, and then I could hear it coming back up the street, the other direction toward me. Basically, this as slow as you could be, almost advertising, hey, I'm casing your street.
That was when Kristen's instincts kicked in, and she turned toward the truck, preparing to confront the driver.
I did look up to confront the driver and initially looked at the face, the window was down, and was prepared to just kind of hold my hand up and say, how can I help you? I looked up and I looked at the driver, and at the same time I saw the DTE decal on the side of the truck. It diffused me completely. It occurred to me that, oh, they're just looking to do service somewhere.
The decals had done exactly what they were designed to do, but as the vehicle continued past her, Kristen noticed details that didn't sit right.
I mean, it was a short sleeve weather day, you know, it was warm, and realized that the driver of the vehicle, I believe, was wearing a balaclava, the style where the whole face is cut out, and a hoodie with the hood up, and that the passenger in the vehicle, who was turning his body towards the passenger window, was also wearing a hooded, it could have been a Tyvek suit for both the driver and the passenger, which I realized that's very out of sorts for this hot weather type of day, especially the balaclava.
By the time she fully processed what she'd seen, Kristen had already continued farther down the street. Behind her, the truck slowed down and pulled to a stop at 3730 Newcastle Drive. Two men stepped out, dressed like utility workers. And once again, everything about their appearance sent the same quiet signal that this was official business and there was nothing to worry about.
Reaching your weight loss goals doesn't have to mean completely changing the way you live your life. What if I told you could make healthy progress with a treatment plan that included medication, access to 24/7 support, nutrition tips, and tools for tracking movement, hydration, and sleep, all personalized to go at your pace? That's weight loss by Hers. Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to ongoing care, dosage and medication adjustments, lifestyle nutrition tips, and 24/7 support with no hidden costs or membership fees. And with options starting as low as just $69 per month, with a 10-month plan when paid upfront in full, Hers provides access to options that fit your goals and your budget. They even offer the convenience of 100% online care with licensed providers on the other side, who learn your story and create a personalized plan to deliver healthy progress you can maintain. Feel like your best self again. Visit forhers.com/madness to get a personalized, affordable plan that gets you. That's forhers.com/madness. forhers.com/madness. We've also provided a link in our show notes. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded drug products are not approved or evaluated for safety, effectiveness, or quality by the FDA. Prescription required. See website for full details, important safety information, and restrictions. Actual price depends on product and plan purchased.
The home at 3730 Newcastle Drive was impressive. Well kept, comfortable, clearly lived in, and massive. It was the home of Hussein and Linda Murray, both 72 years old, the product of 30 years spent running two businesses in Hamtramck, an urban enclave just 5 miles north of downtown Detroit.
Linda Murray and her husband, Hussein Murray, were enjoying the life that they had built over 54 years of marriage.
John Petrofessa, an assistant prosecutor in Oakland County, describes the Murrays' life before everything changed.
They had raised a family. They were enjoying their grandkids. They had a house that was very nice in Rochester Hills that they had bought after 30 years of her husband, who goes by Sam, running two businesses. One was a pawn shop, one was a jewelry store, and their life was going along just like a storybook. But this story doesn't start off with once upon a time, because it doesn't have a fairy tale ending, and it doesn't have a happily ever after.
John explained that this wasn't a story about people still chasing success. It was about a couple who had already built it. Hussein Murray had come to the United States from Lebanon decades earlier. His father had settled in Hamtramck first, and Hussein followed later. Over time, friends began calling him Sam, a name that stuck. From then on, that's what everyone knew him as. Hamtramck is a city surrounded entirely by Detroit, known for its immigrant communities and working-class grit. It was here Sam Murray Golden Glitter and Hamtramck Pawnbrokers popped up along the main drag. The businesses were cash-heavy, which came with risks. In 1991, Sam had been shot during a robbery at his jewelry store. After that, he never went anywhere unarmed. And on the morning of October 11th, 2024, Sam was in his kitchen, his pistol holstered at his hip, as it always was. John Petrofessa later explained what that morning looked like.
About 10, 11 a.m., Sam has just finished cooking food for his employees. It's a Friday, he's planning on going in about noon, and he's bringing food to feed them. So that's on the kitchen counter.
Not long after, Linda returned home from an early morning doctor's appointment. John described what happened next.
When Linda gets there, she starts cooking breakfast, and then there's a knock on the door, which changes everything.
As Sam walked toward the front door, Linda opened her phone to check the Ring camera. That's when she saw two men standing on her porch, wearing high visibility vests, work clothes, gloves, N95 masks, and holding a clipboard. They said they were with DTE, there to inspect a possible gas leak. Both Linda and Sam immediately recognized them. They were the same men who'd come by the night before, around 10 p.m., giving the same story. Sam had turned them away then, telling them it was too late for a house call. The men apologized and said they'd return the next day. And now, here they were. So Sam opened the door and let them in. Around noon on October 11th, 2024, Oakland County Dispatch received a frantic 911 call from Linda Murray. She told the dispatcher her home was being invaded, that she'd been bound and beaten, and that two men posing as utility workers had robbed them. Deputy Copeland arrived within minutes. When Linda opened the door, she was still wearing her cooking apron and holding a cordless phone, her wrists bound with black Gorilla tape. The deputy cut the tape away as Linda tried to explain what had happened. She said her husband had let two men inside and taken them into the basement. That was the last time she'd seen him alive. After that, the men bound her hands, struck her in the face, and fled through the garage. As backup units arrived, officers began clearing the house. The bedrooms had been ransacked, drawers pulled open, jewelry boxes overturned. The kitchen was in complete disarray. Then, on the basement stairs, officers noticed blood smeared along the handrail. At the bottom, they found Sam Murray laying dead on the floor. Because there was so much blood, they initially assumed he'd been shot, but an autopsy would later reveal something very different. A medical examiner described Sam's injuries in detail.
His hands are bound by duct tape and a couple of zip ties, as well as you can see the binding around the mouth and the head, and his feet were also bound by duct tape. You can see that there's purple blotching around the eyes, which is bruising. On the face, he has a bunch of bruising all the way from the forehead all the way down to the front of the neck to basically the collarbones. And he has some lacerations, which are tears in the skin, again, around the jaw. And then the jaw is also fractured. you can see on the scalp, there is a laceration or a tear in his scalp there. On his throat, it looked the same as the face. It had diffuse bruising and some kind of linear, no patterned, nothing like a pattern that I noticed, just some linear bruises. And then he had a fracture of a bone in the throat called the hyoid bone. So the cause of death I've listed here is neck compression, but there's also a mechanism of death. Just because you break a hyoid bone doesn't mean you die from that. What he actually died from was asphyxia. Asphyxia, you know, in the lightest terms, you compress the neck and the jugular veins and carotid arteries, which bring blood to the head and from the head, are compressed. This is where the asphyxia occurs. The reason I know it's neck compression is because the hyoid bone is fractured. It takes only about 11 pounds of pressure to do that, which is basically the weight of your head.
Sam Murray hadn't been shot. He'd been restrained. And then, he'd been slowly suffocated in his own basement. The Oakland County Sheriff's Office moved fast, releasing the Ring doorbell footage to local media, hoping that someone might recognize the men seen on the porch. One detail stood out immediately. One of the suspects appeared to be about 6'6", close to 450 pounds. Even with an N95 mask covering his face, his size was unmistakable. In southwest Detroit, a graphic artist named Gerardo Sacedo saw the coverage and felt his stomach drop.
I'm a graphic artist. T-shirts, business cards, magnetics, banners, anything to do with advertisement. That's what I do.
As he watched the footage, Gerardo began to realize he might have played a role in the crime without knowing it. He explained what went through his mind as the story broke.
Yeah, actually I was driving home from work and I'm always listening to news radio and I heard about this sad incident that happened and it clicked in my head right away, man, I just done some magnetic signs and I hope there's no tie between them. So I went home, I'm having dinner and I turned the TV on and now I saw it on the news. And I told my wife, you know, I says, I think I might have, you know, been involved in this, unfortunately, because I had made up some magnetic signs for DTE, and I wanted to clear my name, you know, to make sure, you know, I was not involved in it.
Gerardo recognized the large man in the Ring footage immediately. He'd been a customer. Just a week earlier, the man had come to Gerardo's shop asking for custom-printed magnetic DTE signs. Gerardo explained how the interaction had seemed ordinary at the time.
He told me he was a contractor. I get plenty of contractors come to me often, you know, and I'm here for advertisement.
As soon as he made the connection, Gerardo contacted police and turned over security footage from October 4th when the order was made inside his shop. There was no question, it was the same man, 37-year-old Carlos Hernandez, a man who was no stranger to law enforcement. In 2006, he'd been convicted of criminal sexual conduct and spent the next 15 years in prison and released in 2022. After prison, Carlos moved to Texas with his girlfriend Amanda, and in the summer of 2024, the two returned to Detroit to get married and spend time with family. But investigators would come to believe there was another reason for the trip, one that involved a stolen truck, fake utility decals, and a plan that was already unraveling. Investigators were still working to identify the second man seen in the Ring footage, a man that appeared to be black, around 6 feet tall, his face completely covered with a balaclava. Even so, someone recognized him. Kelly Broad, a concrete supervisor, had seen the footage on the news and immediately felt a jolt of recognition. The man's build, his clothing, even the way he carried himself felt familiar.
He worked for me as a temporary employee and then later on we hired him into the main company, St. Mary's Cement. When I saw it, I thought to myself, gosh, that looks like Joshua Tuazza. He had that same black hat, that floppy hat that he always wore to work, and he's got that black satchel that he always carried with him to work and that stuff.
The man Kelly recognized was 39-year-old Joshua Zuazo. Kelly described Joshua's time working under him.
They go through a 90-day probation period, and within that 90 days, we have an opportunity to look at him. Josh, even though he was, you know, was a good worker, you could ask him to go out and do stuff for you. He had a problem with wearing safety gear and sometimes not doing the right things when it came to safety. And I had several complaints about him, but once they hire him to the company, into St. Mary Smith, then we give them uniforms, steel-toed boots, safety glasses, and they needed them, and that was something that he needed, so we got him some safety glasses. We bought him prescription glasses.
As Kelly watched the ring footage, he recognized many of those same items. The hat, the satchel, the work clothing, and he knew something else. Joshua had been fired a few months earlier, and not everything had been returned. Kelly explained what happened when Joshua left the company.
We requested they give him back the circumstances in which Mr. Zuazo left employment were less than, he was pretty upset. It would be fair to say that he had uniforms that he hadn't turned in, or he was actually in a uniform when he left, I believe.
When investigators showed Linda Murray a photograph of Joshua Zuazo, she didn't hesitate. She identified him as one of the men who attacked her. According to Linda, there'd been a moment during the assault when Joshua removed his mask, so there was no doubt in her mind. Like Carlos Hernandez, Joshua Zuazo had a lengthy criminal history dating back to 2004, with convictions for armed robbery and receiving stolen property. As detectives dug deeper, they uncovered another critical link. Carlos Hernandez and Joshua Zuazo weren't strangers. They'd known each other their entire lives.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Save big on your landscape project at Menards. Whether you're shopping for edgers, pavers, or wall blocks, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block ready to take home today. Build a beautiful border for your landscape with our interlock edgers on sale now through March 22nd. Save big on landscape block at Menards. Also, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Carlos Hernandez was the first to be taken into custody. In the hours after the murder, he loaded his Jeep with his wife, his pets, and what he could carry, and headed south toward Texas. But investigators were already moving. A multi-state BOLO was issued for the vehicle, and on October 12th, Carlos was stopped and arrested in Shreveport, Louisiana. Oakland County Assistant Prosecutor John Petrofessa later explained what officers found during the search of the Jeep.
Sheriff's office is on that. Sheriff's office is putting out notices all the way through the path of where we expect them to be driving, and Louisiana comes across them first. And when they go through that car, there's a lot of things of value that they find in that car. They come across three pairs of size 13 Nikes. And on the bottom and on the inside of one of those pair of size 13 Nikes is blood, and the DNA comes back to the victim. And there's a size 11 tan work boots that also has blood on it, that also comes back to the victim. As they went through it, there's a white size 5XL t-shirt with blood on it that comes back to the victim. They also discover jewelry boxes in his luggage that he has packed up. And those jewelry boxes are very distinct. That costume jewelry is very distinct. And one of the things they also find in there is this Poco license plate, which was the original license plate on the burnt up vehicle before it got stolen.
Back in Michigan, evidence recovered from inside the Murray home only strengthened the case. The assistant prosecutor explains the crime scene investigators found in the basement.
Not only was there DNA on the items that were found in Louisiana, But the crime scene folks also processed the actual basement crime scene. And both defendants' DNA are found inside that basement, inside that crime scene, on pieces of duct tape that were used.
2 days later, on October 14th, Joshua was arrested without incident at a construction site near Detroit. Both men were charged with first-degree felony murder and two counts of unlawful imprisonment. The physical evidence alone was overwhelming, but it was the digital trail, messages exchanged between Carlos and Joshua, and between Carlos and his wife, Amanda, that would ultimately reveal just how deliberate this crime had been. The text messages told a story the men wouldn't, that Carlos and Joshua had been planning a robbery since at least September 20th, nearly 3 weeks before the murder. They talked about picking locks and finding a getaway vehicle, about building a plan that sounded, on paper, like something out of a movie. And as the days passed, the details hardened. They discussed stealing a truck and disguising it with magnetic DTE signage. They talked about printing official-looking paperwork for a clipboard. They acquired ID badges that would help sell the illusion. And at the same time, Joshua was becoming increasingly desperate for money. Carlos tried to steady him, texting, "What we planning gonna be it? It's gonna get us where we need to be." But the pressure was coming from another direction too. Carlos's wife Amanda was reminding him that they were broke, already 5 days behind on rent. On October 8th, just days before the murder, Carlos texted Amanda, "I hope we get enough money to buy a house." Amanda replied, "Me too, baby. Our own home, no rent." That was the fantasy, the dream of one last score, and then a clean break. After all, they planned to leave Detroit behind and start over in Texas. For their target, Carlos chose Sam Murray. Oakland County Assistant Prosecutor John Petrofessa explains why Sam had been on Carlos's radar.
A year earlier, Fernandez had been to that jewelry and pawn shop, pawned items at that store. He came back in February of 2024 to pick up his items, and he specifically asked to meet with the owner when he was there to pick up his items that last time.
Carlos knew Sam dealt in gold and diamonds, and from that, he made an assumption that there had to be cash somewhere, a safe full of money, drawers filled with jewelry, decades of success, waiting to be taken. But as the plan moved closer to reality, detectives uncovered another critical step. Oakland County Sheriff's Detective Patchmeyer later described a shopping trip Carlos and Joshua made to Home Depot on October 10th, the day before the murder.
Actually contacted Home Depot Asset Protection to see if they could link up purchases of certain items at the same time. Requested a high-vis vest in Gorilla Tape, look up these certain items, see if they were purchased, and then look into the video. They sent us a transaction receipt and video.
The footage showed Carlos and Joshua checking out together. Detective Patchmeyer detailed what they bought.
There's multiple items, the Gorilla black duct tape, the respirators, cotton spray socks with hood, safety vest, the gloves.
They now had everything they needed, and the very next day, on October 11th, 2024, Carlos and Joshua put their plan into motion, making their first and only attempt. John Petrofessa, an assistant prosecutor in Oakland County, and Linda Murray would later piece together exactly how the crime unfolded and what happened began the night before the murder. Petrofessa explains how Carlos and Joshua first approached the Murray home around 10 p.m.
They knocked on their door at 10 p.m. Sam went to the door, opens the door. The defendant and his co-defendant are posing as DTE workers. They start trying to get into the house. the defendant, Hernandez, is doing the talking. He's also the closest one to the door. Suazo is behind him. It's captured on Ring camera. And he's saying, we're in the neighborhood, there's a gas leak. And Linda is at the top of the stairs because she was in the bedroom and she's looking down. And she says she can see them at the door frame. And she can also see him because the Ring camera bounces to her phone. So she can also see what's going on through the Ring camera. And she yells down to her husband, it's kind of late for a gas meter check. And they start still trying to get in with Hernandez, trying to get in. They have to check to see if you have a gas leak inside. And Linda is suspicious and she yells down, Sam, do you have your gun? Because Sam was known to carry his gun on his right hip. He would carry a Glock, part of the business of pawn shop owning down in Hamtramck, part of the business of jewelry store owning. It can be dangerous. It's a business where people carry cash. It's a people may keep things of value at the house. He was armed. Sam isn't going to let him in the house at 10 o'clock. So he tells him, you're not coming in. At that point, Hernandez says, well, we'll come back tomorrow.
It was the moment that changed everything. Realizing Sam was armed, Carlos and Joshua adjusted their plan. The next morning, they stopped at Lowe's and purchased industrial-strength zip ties. Then, just after 11 o'clock, they returned to the Murray home, this time dressed as utility workers. Linda Murray later described what she saw when they came back.
I hear through the Ring camera that someone was saying DTE. My husband goes to the front door. He opens the door and Hernandez again asks him to sign the clipboard to give him permission to come into the house. Zawaza was with him. They come in. They start walking toward the basement.
They told Sam they needed to check the furnace and water heater. As they moved inside the house, Linda kept an eye on them.
Zawaza goes into the laundry room, and I assumed he was going to look for gas leak, but he looked at the wall where I have artwork instead. And Hernandez, he was standing by the garage door and the basement door, because a hallway there he was standing between. Hernandez tells me that he forgot his meter and he had to go to the truck to get it. I don't know if he left the house because the door would have it trying to it when you open it. My husband starts to go down the basement steps.
They want to check the furnace downstairs in the basement. And they're starting to go downstairs. Sam is going to show them where the gas hooks up inside. Sam is leading the way downstairs. And behind him is Zuazo. And behind him is Hernandez, who closes the door. And that's going to be the last time Linda ever sees her husband alive.
Petra Fessa described what happened upstairs moments later.
At that point, she went back to cooking. She's trying to cook and finish breakfast. She doesn't hear anything. She doesn't hear any commotion downstairs. But instead, Hernandez comes up from downstairs. He's a big, imposing guy.
I was sitting at my kitchen table, and Hernandez comes up from the basement. And I step towards him to see if he needed something. Then he asks me, he says, where's the jewelry and where's the money? And where's the safe? And I said, I have no safe. And he says, where's the jewelry? And I said, in the bank, in the safety deposit box. And then he says, where's the money? And I said, just what's in my purse and what's in my husband's pocket. Zawazu comes upstairs also. And I asked him, where's my husband? Several times. I was asking both of them. Zawaza tells me that he's sleeping.
It was at this moment that Linda noticed blood on Joshua's vest.
She sees blood on the front of Zawaza's shirt. She starts screaming. She's getting upset. So Hernandez hauls off and slugs her in the face, left side of her face. He then puts her against the wall, so you're going to stop screaming. And she says she'll stop screaming. At which point in time, he puts her in the kitchen.
Sits me at the kitchen chair. Hernandez is binding my hands and my ankles together, duct tape. Again, he's asking me, where is the safe? Where is the jewelry? Where is the money? And I reply the same answer.
And when he binds her with duct tape, he starts going through her purse. He wants the car keys. He wants the cash. He goes through a kitchen drawer, and Zuazo at this point in time goes upstairs and he ransacks the upstairs of the house looking for anything of value. And she'll tell you, he took stuff from the house.
When Zuazo came downstairs, I saw that he was carrying a drawer from my jewelry box.
But it was nothing of great value. He went through my jewelry box. He took my jewelry box. Costume jewelry. It wasn't worth anything.
By then, it was clear the robbery hadn't gone as planned. Linda described the moment she sensed they were ready to leave.
Hernandez wanted to put me in the closet, but because I was bound, I couldn't move. And Zuazo wanted to put me in the closet and shut the door, I imagine. Grabbed me by the shoulder and the arm, but then I was really wobbly, and he sat me down in the chair. He looked a little nervous and was like moving from foot to foot and asked, told Hernandez, "Let's go, bro." I hear the door slam down, the garage door. I hear that slam. Around my ankles, there was a small tab of tape that was loose, and I worked it around until it came off.
Linda still couldn't free her hands, but she managed to reach a cordless phone and call 911. Petrofessa explained what Carlos did next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
During Lowe's Pro Savings Days, save more on what goes into the job. Add power to your lineup with a free DeWalt 20-volt max 5-amp-hour battery when you buy a select DeWalt 20-volt max tool. Plus, get up to 35% off select major appliances from Whirlpool, Maytag, and more. Get the job done right. Keep more in your pocket. That's Pro Savings Days. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 327. Selection varies by location. While supplies last.
What Hernandez did after he leaves that scene, he goes, puts that truck in Detroit and sets it ablaze, destroys the truck, just trying to demolish any type of evidence that's in the truck. It's ablaze, it's on fire. Then he hits the road with his wife, I think it's her child, and I think a couple pets, and they're headed out of here back to where we knew they lived at after they became a focus back in Texas.
The trial of Carlos Hernandez and Joshua Zuazo began on September 29, 2025, nearly a year after Sam Murray's death. Both men sat in the same courtroom as co-defendants, but this was anything but a typical trial. Each defendant had their own jury, each had their own attorney, and each defense pointed the finger squarely at the other. Joshua Zuazo's attorney took the first swing, arguing this was a case of mistaken identity, that there was no definitive proof Joshua had ever been inside the Murray home. During opening arguments, his attorney framed the issue this way.
There isn't any question that this happened. It's a question of who did it. And the identification is the issue as it affects Joshua Zuazo.
Well, the ring camera makes it really clear who the big fellow is. It doesn't really identify Mr. Zuazo.
Joshua's defense argued that Linda Murray had simply gotten it wrong, that the trauma of the attack had caused her to misidentify Joshua as one of the men inside her home. Joshua's attorney expanded on that argument.
And she can certainly identify Hernandez, but I submit to you that she has adopted an understanding that Mr. Zuazo, because he is the defendant, is actually the person who was there at her house. She's testifying honestly. She's simply mistaken. And I think that that is a common enough thing that can happen to a person who's a victim of a crime. And even if she wasn't a victim herself, although she was or is, for the unlawful imprisonment perpetrated by Hernandez, who tied her up with duct tape, she's got all that trauma to deal with. So that could have an effect on her ability to recount the events completely accurately and to be able to identify Mr. Zuazo.
It was a careful argument, but it was one the prosecution dismantled quickly. because Linda Murray didn't need to guess who had been there. The evidence spoke for itself.
It's impossible for Mrs. Murray to know that the defendant's DNA is going to be found in the basement of her house. That's impossible. Two sets of duct tape in the basement of that house. That's identification.
So we're supposed to believe that somehow he does all this preparation work, that somehow he's identified by all these witnesses, but somehow there was somebody else who was there with Hernandez on the night of the 10th, and then suddenly that person disappears and he's the one who goes with him to Lowe's, and then suddenly he disappears again. That's not reasonable, and that's not what the facts are.
When it came to Carlos Hernandez, the defense took a very different approach. His attorney admitted the robbery outright, but denied the murder. Her argument was simple. Yes, Carlos went there to steal, but Joshua was the one who killed Sam Murray. She laid that out plainly for the jury.
The unfortunate death of Mr. Murray was never part of the plan. Never even part of the discussion. It will be clear to you that Mr. Hernandez did not take part in the beating of Mr. Murray.
The strategy was clear. Carlos would survive by pushing Joshua under the bus. His attorney emphasized that Linda Murray never saw blood on Carlos during the attack upstairs. But again, the evidence told a different story. The prosecution introduced proof that Sam Murray's blood was found on Carlos's clothing and shoes. The defense called it contamination. The prosecution called it reality.
Was Mr. Hernandez's DNA on the rolls of duct tape? Yes, we know he purchased the rolls of duct tape. Mr. Hernandez's DNA was also found on a number of items that were found in the back of his car after he handled them and packed them into his car. We also know that he packed all of the items that Mr. Zuazo was wearing in a black bag, which was found in his trunk. In that black bag, we were told Mr. Zuazo's boots, gloves, hat, and two masks were located. DNA clearly shows that those items were his, and they matched what he wore on the Ring camera. Now, how did Mr. Murray's DNA end up on the large white t-shirt and the shoes of Mr. Hernandez? Well, unfortunately, Mr. Hernandez does not have the years of training regarding biological substances like the evidence technicians. Mr. Hernandez's own clothing was found in the same plastic bag as the bloody items from Mr. Zuazo.
The prosecution also dismantled the idea that one man could have subdued Sam Murray alone.
At no point have I ever theorized that only one of the defendants obliterated Mr. Murray in that basement. I don't believe only one of those defendants had contact with him when this was occurring. I believe both defendants had contact with him down in that basement when he put up that struggle, because they have to disarm him. And disarming him first is probably one of the main priorities. But then he's attacked from the back and his head is bleeding. There was no way one person was controlling Mr. Murray all by themselves to both tie him up, keep him in a position, do all that. That doesn't seem to me to be reasonable.
After closing arguments, both juries were sent out to deliberate separately. Just 15 minutes later, the first verdict came back. Joshua Zuazo's jury had reached a decision.
The jury was sent out to deliberate at 4 p.m. Note 1 came in on behalf of Mr. Zuazo at 4:15 p.m. and it said, "We have reached a verdict."
Count 1, first degree felony murder. Guilty as charged of first degree felony murder.
Carlos Hernandez's jury didn't take much longer. Less than an hour later, their verdict was read.
Count 1, first degree felony murder. The jury finds defendant Hernandez guilty as charged.
On December 9th, 2025, both Carlos and Joshua were sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. In the fall of 2024, Carlos Hernandez and Joshua Zuazo convinced themselves they were on the brink of a big score. One job, one payout, a clean exit, and they believed wealth was waiting for them on the other side of Sam Murray's front door. They spent weeks planning and hundreds of dollars on supplies. They stole a truck, ordered custom signage, and rehearsed every step. But once inside the house, all they found was about $300 in cash, a cell phone, an Apple Watch, and some custom jewelry worth almost nothing.
The little that actual value that they took, the only thing of value that they took that day was Mr. Murray's life. That's the only thing of value that was taken. The rest was junk.
Don't miss Scarpetta, a propulsive new crime thriller starring Academy Award winner Nicole Kidman, Academy Award winner Jamie Lee Curtis, Emmy winner Bobby Cannavale, with Emmy nominee Simon Baker and Academy Award winner Ariana DeBose. Scarpetta follows Dr. Kay Scarpetta, Nicole Kidman, a brilliant and no-nonsense chief medical examiner, as she investigates a haunting murder that strangely parallels her first major case from decades earlier. Is the case that made her the case that breaks her? Based on the best-selling crime novels by Patricia Cornwell, Scarpetta is both a crime thriller and messy family drama that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Get ready to hunt a serial killer in the satisfying series with terrifying twists and an ending you won't see coming. Watch all episodes of Scarpetta now, only on Prime Video.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Carlos and Joshua assumed that because Sam Murray was a successful pawnbroker and jeweler, he must be hiding a fortune. But Sam's real treasure was never inside a safe or hidden in a drawer. It had always been right in front of them. 54 years of marriage to his wife Linda, 3 children who adored him, 11 grandchildren who carry his name and his spirit forward, a lifetime of trust, generosity, and quiet kindness built inside his community. Hollywood likes to paint pawnbrokers as shady and untrustworthy, but Sam spent his life proving the opposite. He was known as a man with a heart of gold, someone who helped people when they were struggling, someone who paid medical bills for customers who couldn't afford them, a mentor and a father figure. And on October 11th, 2024, 2 men chasing the fantasy of one last score took everything he built and reduced it all to a crime scene. But they failed to take what actually mattered. Because today, that lives on in his widow, his children, his grandchildren, and the community that remembers exactly who Sam Murray was. Follow The Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. To support the show and get access to early release and ad-free episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. You can also hit subscribe in Apple Podcasts. If you'd like to watch our Thursday release episodes between the madness, you can find them on YouTube and Spotify. To find us on all social media platforms, search The Minds of Madness. And finally, by checking out our sponsors and using our promo codes, you're also helping support the show. We've got all the links in our episode notes. So until next week, thanks for listening.
I'm a sinner, I've done bad things. Left scars where love should sing. I hurt people, I break dreams. I'm the shadow tearing at the seams. I wear a smile, but it's a disguise. Ordinary people do unthinkable lies. Mine's a madness, twist and turn. Hearts on fire, let them burn. I'll seduce you, take it all. Watch you crumble, watch you fall. Mine's a madness, whisper sweet. I'm the devil you want to feed.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.